This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, today we've got a fantastic show. We've got Rocky Sethi.
Rocky Sethi, Chief Operating Officer from Adara Homes. So great to have Rocky on the show. He's been operating in our market for decades. Also, Calgary before that for a stint. But we'll let Rocky tell the story. It was so great having Rocky in Kokomo Studios a few weeks back before you went on your extended paternity leave.
Yeah, and I remember there was a lot of takeaways from this conversation. I was super impressed. Rocky obviously has been operating in our market for a long time. He has tons of experience. Everybody's going to learn a lot from this conversation. And I really like the Adara Homes model because they are doing a lot of development in the Lower Mainland. And they seem to be kind of doubling down on what they know, which is really great.
Finding their niche and sticking to it. And that's where the success lies.
Absolutely. This is a great conversation today for sure.
And Adam, before we get to our talk with Rocky, there's a few things to discuss. One is you have now left Mexico.
I've left Bucerías, also known as BC Rías.
Also known as Boomertown.
Boomerville. You know, I mean, we had a really great time. Really great. By the end, though, we were kind of ready to move on. But yeah, tons of people from BC, almost everybody in their 60s to 80s.
And you were saying, like, when you met somebody, it wasn't like, where are you from, Canada, or where are you from, Vancouver? It was like, which street in Shaughnessy are you from?
Yeah.
Like, there's an assumption everybody's from the Lower Mainland almost.
Yeah, which of the islands are you from in BC, right? It's like everybody we met was from like Bowen or the Sunshine Coast or whatever. Yeah, for sure.
And how many people from British Columbia have you met in Cartagena, Colombia? You've been there since what, yesterday?
Zero. Yeah, it feels good. It feels really good. It's you know what? It's been good. Not to say that I don't like meeting people from BC.
Maybe we should. Let's back that up a bit. But it's a little bit more exotic by the sounds of things.
I'm putting my Duolingo to work here. This is the difference. I feel like that was very relaxing. My wife made the comment that the nice thing about Bucerías is that boomers and young families need the exact same thing. Which is just, you know, like a pretty, they're looking for the same thing, I should say, an easy pace in life, where I feel like the area I'm
baby
staying.
Baby food?
Yeah. Baby food and diapers? No. an easy pace of life is what we were talking about. I'm saying my first couple of days in Cartagena, pretty vibrant.
Sounds like quite a party
sure how
town.
We're gonna, we need a babysitter is what we need to truly enjoy this place.
And one thing you missed being away is Oakwin had its holiday party. Oakwin, of course, a proud sponsor of the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast that I went to on Saturday night, which was, first off, an enormous party. There is a lot of new agents. They haven't had a party since before COVID.
Right.
And I just mean not necessarily newer agents, but agents that have entered the fold. It was an enormous party, like hundreds and hundreds of people. It was, man, what a time. Disco themed.
So I saw the disco theme. And, you know, one thing is I'm sorry I missed it for sure, because it looked like a good party. And all I saw was the Instagram stories and that sort of thing. But the one thing I will say as well, for a disco themed party, it kind of looked like nobody dressed up at all.
But then
some people really, really dressed up. Like the gap between like the do's and don'ts, or the like it was, it seemed like there were a lot of people that didn't participate. Is that true?
I would say there was like, you know, of every 100, maybe 90 people, you know, wearing suits and dresses and, you know, just kind of formal wear, probably 6 to 8 of the last 10, you know, might have some sort of like slight disco theme. And then like 2 or 3 people that literally went like full throttle,
full disco,
like shaved in a 70s shave, like cut their hair, it just all out. It was crazy.
I appreciate when people do that. And I'm
like eight inch platform shoes, shirts that were unbuttoned to the belly button, you know, just full
right
on.
Right, not my torso. But yeah, I appreciate when people do that. I can't actually. I think I told
you. You have a traumatic experience with this, though.
I did tell you this story. Yeah, I hinted that I would tell it again, but when I first met my wife, when we were dating, her group of friends had a party, a big party. Like they had they rented a space in that somebody who owned an Estrada building downtown with like a big kind of party space booked the space. And it was actually a big party. And the theme was the future. And so I had no idea what I was going to do for this. And I think I got fairly in my vague. Head a little bit. Yeah. Fairly vague. I think I got in my head and I was like, okay, I'm going to go all out for this.
But you're dressing to
impress.
And
I never would be the one who would go all out for one of these parties. But anyway, so I go and I dressed as this is actually kind of crazy thinking of it. It's actually like, how did I make this mistake? I dressed as the, have you seen Total Recall? Do you remember Total Recall?
It was
an 80s movie set in the future. And one of the things was there was a 3-breasted prostitute in one scene. And it's really like about it's about a 15-second clip from a movie that wasn't probably, I mean, it was a big splash.
I don't know how many people.
Generally speaking, though, my wife is a little bit young, not much younger, but young enough that I'm
young enough that you might be the only guy that knew Total Recall.
Yeah. Yeah. Like this is generally, I think they probably just missed that movie, this generation of party. And I show up completely like all out in as a 3-breasted futuristic prostitute from Total Recall. And I nailed the outfit completely. The issue was that nobody really took it seriously. And so I spent almost the entire night, almost everybody knew each other. I didn't know anybody. and I'm like so full bore, like so beyond, like most guys, like somebody put tinfoil around their baseball cap. Like that was future. That was like one of the second, that was probably the second most elaborate costume. Was like a guy who like, you know, was like, oh yeah, tinfoil, like shiny. Like, so anyways, that was a bad night. So I learned my lesson and I haven't gone full bore on much of anything in life since.
and you know, but this isn't even in the defense. There was a couple of good friends of the program who were really decked out. I hardly recognized them and everybody looked great. And it was just, there's some contrast there between those who got the memo and those who didn't.
Party, but I appreciate it good. I'll tell you, the 3-breasted prostitute from Total Recall appreciates a good costume.
Last but not least, before we get to our talk with Rocky Sethi, Adam, we are all out of one of the Live from Kokomo t-shirts now. Those are long gone. We do have a couple of t-shirts left, the blue Build More Housing t-shirts. But Sonia has just been, it's crazy. She's hard at work every day sending those out. If you're interested in a t-shirt, a Vancouver Real Estate Podcast t-shirt of the highest quality, how can you get one of those, Adam?
You got to follow us on Instagram at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Share your favorite episode on your story and tag us in it. We will repost and we'll do our best to get shirts out to you while supplies last. We got some other shirts that are being made. They're probably not going to be ready until the new year, but we'll be talking more about them. But definitely, if you like the show, follow us on Instagram, share your favorite episode, and we'll do what we can to get you a shirt.
Great, great stocking stuffers for sure as well. But yeah, maybe we'll cut to our talk with Rocky Sethi, the Chief Operating Officer from Adara Homes. This is such a great conversation, so I hope everyone enjoys.
I can't wait.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Berquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Rocky Sethi. He is the Chief Operating Officer at Adara. How you doing, Rocky?
I'm well. How are you guys?
Yeah, good, good. Thanks thanks for coming down, Rocky. Appreciate you coming to the studio. Maybe for people who don't know much about you or Adara, can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure, yeah. I'm mid-40s, been in Vancouver most of my life, or Metro Vancouver, Richmond specifically most of my life. Did a couple of short stints in Kelowna and Edmonton. Married to my wife of almost 20 years, Binny. Got a 10-year-old, 14-year-old, a pretty amazing dog. And we live in, like I said, in Richmond, but in the Steveston area. Work downtown, Chief Operating Officer with Adara, and have been with a number of pretty significant developer construction companies in Western Canada for the last 15 years.
Nice. Did you grow up in Kelowna, or what was the Kelowna connection?
I grew up in Richmond, moved out to Kelowna in 07, just before, you know, it was, I was a general contractor and small builder here in Vancouver, and it was getting a little bit difficult to scrounge up funds for next projects, and you know, didn't have a lot of experience running bigger, you know, more cash flow type of projects under my belt, and an opportunity came up in Kelowna to take over a sizable operation for an Edmonton-based developer and develop some properties out throughout the Okanagan. So I jumped on that, moved the family up there, and yeah, that's how I ended up in Kelowna.
And so you were a general contractor here before you got into kind of working with larger developers?
Correct.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Yeah. And how did you, what prompted that transition? I guess you kind of just spoke a little bit about
it. Yeah, I guess it was a lack of options. Yeah, no, I graduated from UBC with a bachelor's in urban land economics. After that, didn't really know what I wanted to do. Got my real estate license. So I was as a real estate realtor with RE/MAX West Coast for a few years. Built a house kind of on the side with a friend, you know, enjoyed that, did five more, really enjoyed that, and realized I liked building houses or building stuff more than I liked selling it. So kind of transitioned over there over the following few years.
And were those houses mainly in Richmond? Because I know you stay away from the city of Vancouver.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, they were in Richmond, and yeah, definitely stay away from city of Vancouver at this point. I mean, you know, hopefully things are on the transition over there, but and I wish them well.
And one more kind of housekeeping item. We mentioned to a colleague of ours in the office that you were coming down, and his first comment was, "Rocky, that's the coolest name I've ever
That's the coolest name I've ever heard.
You must get that a lot.
Yeah, you got to get that all the time, right?
Yeah, it's I say it's cool now, and it's tough though because I don't have a very good memory for names, but my name's very memorable and easier. So everybody always remembers my name, and I don't remember theirs. So it's a challenge there. And then I also say it's cool now, but it wasn't so cool when you're like 140 pounds in grade 7. So you get picked on a bit.
Makes sense.
Actually, yeah, that totally makes sense. Yeah, you just beat the hell out of Rocky.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to jump into actually transitioning into multifamily and working with developers. But just to backtrack a little bit, how did you get your start in real estate? Why real estate?
I grew up in real estate. I said I had the fortune to grow up in Century 21 office, mustard jackets and cheap crappy coffee, with lots of that carcinogenic whitener.
Right.
and you know, so my dad was a realtor. I was actually surrounded by some of the industry's best at the time, really high performers, and helped them with contracts and helped them take Polaroids and attach those and got the experience of driving them down to Broadway to the real estate board and submit them for the hot sheets and all that kind of stuff. So it was just, that was my first introduction to real estate.
Do you think that, and I say this from an adult getting into real estate, but how it kind of transitions or changes the way you see a city, like growing up with driving around with a dad in the industry, do you think you saw the city or Metro Vancouver in a different way, like in terms of just how it's changing? I don't know. Do you think that gave you a lens to see the city in a different way?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've never been asked that question before, but I will say one of my best qualities as a developer is vision on sites, and maybe that's part of it. I see a piece of dirt, and I immediately know what should go on it. And it's not just me as a developer, that's what has to go on there, but it's taking into account generally what I know about the market, what I know about the community, market demands at the time. So yeah, that might be a part of it. It's just been kind of ingrained in me since such an early age.
Did you guys talk about real estate, like around the dinner table?
That stuff, not really. I think it was my dad and I had a fairly close relationship around work. So I understood it and he understood it. And we just kind of talked about it like that, but not necessarily around the dinner table as much.
Mm. Yeah. Just thinking about you go and we're skipping a lot. And I know you've been operated outside of Metro Vancouver as well, which we'll get back to, but, so you go to UBC, you do the real estate degree.
Yeah, like the BCom and Urban Land, yep.
Right. You become a realtor, you become a general contractor, you start working for developers. Now you're the chief operating officer at Adara.
Yep.
Can you talk a little bit about, I guess, what a day in life looks like, but also what you're doing? What that chief operating officer does at Adara?
Sure. I'll start with the last question first. My role at Adara is overseeing the operations, so the daily operations from, involved in acquisitions, development, construction, sales and marketing, and customer service. So it's all from soup to nuts on the development side. And we've got a team of about 50 people that's from the office out to the sites, across all those disciplines and silos. And, my job is to try to kind of keep them all working together, pulling the same, all the horses pulling in the same direction. Yeah. So that's kind of what I do. A day in the life of me is, it really does, fortunately revolve around my work schedule. So today I had a later day. We were talking earlier going to the Canucks game.
Yep. And sounds like a great job. We'll
see what happens. And so I hit the gym, or at least I went to the gym at 6 this morning, and then, head home, see the kids, and then head out to the office.
I'm just thinking about, so City of Vancouver is off limits for Adara. At least for the time being, but how do you, in terms of acquisitions, like where can you talk a little bit about that process? And what Adara is looking for and what makes a good deal?
Sure.
In terms of, acquiring the property.
Again, I have to qualify the City of Vancouver too. I would say our job as a developer is hard enough. And, we like to deal with municipalities that, not necessarily tee it up and make it all easy, but have goalposts that that are generally set, you know, a structure that allows us to have some predictability in our business. That's all we're asking for. So, you know, so certain municipalities, not just City of Vancouver, have been challenging to deal with in the past. And, you know, I'm hoping for better things there. And also in some other municipalities, I hope we have turned a page. But yeah, no, we're really looking at, over the last few years, we've been heavily focused on acquiring and developing land that's transit oriented. That's a huge driver for growth in Metro Vancouver. We know our buyers demand it. We focus entirely on wood frame. So we do townhomes, stack townhomes, six-story wood frame, and all of the platform is now transitioned over to mass timber, which has been I think a bit of a game changer. And so hopefully, yeah, on the horizon is something taller in mass timber. So that would be our scope. But we don't do anything in concrete aside from, you know, we joke around, except for our foundations and an industrial. So we do have an industrial portfolio that we do build. So we manage it, and we have some that we just completed about 300,000 square feet of industrial in Burnaby, I guess about 4 years ago.
So. You sell the industrial or hold the industrial?
We hold it.
You hold it. Yep. And so the couple things, why only wood frame? Is it the timelines that seem to work out?
Yeah, that you're right. There that's definitely a component of it, and it's a bit more flexible. It kind of insulates you, or it allows you to be insulated a bit from the market upturns and downturns. So it that's been a bit of a driver. Yeah.
And then how has mass timber changed the game for you guys? And do you like working with mass timber as opposed to just more
stick frame traditional?
Yeah,
it is exactly, it is a game changer. It's I toured some folks from Portland down, they were up here from Portland a few weeks ago, and went on one of our sites, and they were blown away, you know, how our sites are, how clean they are, how fast they go up, and a lot of the other things that mass timber, the inherent characteristics of mass timber, what they allow us to do. Our trades like it, you know, so shout out to all the trades out there that have a difficult enough job as it is. Working on a mass timber site is a little easier. The thought process is done digitally, so we build our projects rebuild them, I guess, in 3D modeling through some sub consultants that we use, and then we build them on site. So they definitely are. It's really, really a different process.
So like the framing disappears, right? Like is it more like they're linking up? Like everything gets delivered to the site and then you're connecting things?
And just to piggyback on that, we've talked a little bit about mass timber on the show, but for somebody listening that's like totally out to lunch here, can you just explain the difference and how it's...
Yeah. We'll start with that. I think everybody's pretty familiar with a traditional stick frame, wood frame site. You've got your floor joists. They're all to site individually, cut on site, sheeted with plywood. You've got your walls, which are all framed on site. Again, 2x4, top bottom plates, and then you repeat. With mass timber, the floor system is made up of a different, depending on how larger spans are. It's a laminated piece of timber. Generally 2x4s, but they could be bigger, that are laminated in different directions. So they have the different strengths go in different directions and let you span varying lengths. And that's really your floor system. It's all made from regional forests. So our suppliers here source all the material in our province, which is nice. It's manufactured in our province. And then they are shipped, like you said, to site and then essentially assembled. So they're put to site. There's no cutting on site. There's no drilling on site because we pre-drill all of our floors for our plumbing runs and HVAC runs. So it really is a little bit more elegant of a way to build. And then our walls, instead of stick framing them on site, we do, I mean, a lot of guys do it now, but we do prefab walls. So all of our walls are traditionally framed walls. So they're 2x4, but they come to site prefabricated. We just basically erect them into place.
And the benefit of building with mass timber, I know that there's carbon capture elements that are great, but in terms of like actually like sound transfer and like, can you talk a little bit about like what are some of the benefits of mass timber?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'll do a shameless plug for we have two sites right now that are for sale, Pura in Surrey and Seoul in Coquitlam. And aside from, you know, mentioning because we have homes for sale, the other is to go with your question on sound. Both of those presentation centers have sound rooms built there. So even if you're not interested in purchasing a home, go and check them out. We have a sound room which mimics a room in a home built to code. And then right beside it is a room in a home built with our, what we call Smartwood, which is our mass timber floor system with the acoustical, basically acoustical floor assembly that allows us to actually meet or exceed concrete built to code. So it's so we actually get very, and we work with acoustical consultants up front during the design phase. We have them come out and test during construction, and then we have them come out and test after construction. That's something I don't know if any other developer in the city does that. So we do that, and so we, you know, the proof is in the pudding. We actually are able to deliver on what we're telling people we're designing to.
And is it's how much quicker is it to construct a project with mass timber?
On the framing side, it's about 30% faster. So it's considerable. We've had multiple projects and they vary a little bit, but that's generally the number that we see.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So it's funny, but I feel like that's a lot of people demand concrete, but I think a lot of it has to do with sound transfer. So it's interesting that all the measures that you're taking right now from wood frame, because if you can get a very similar product out to the market quicker and more cost effective
and environmentally sound
and more environmentally sound, I mean, it seems like a good bet.
Yeah, I mean that, and where we are really looking to guys like yourselves too is to understand the product, because and that's why we built the sound rooms. We do a lot of outreach with the real estate community to help them understand it. And I agree. I mean, while we feel our product is as good or better than concrete, we understand that there's a perception. So right now what we're trying to do is move the needle over from being compared to traditional wood frame to understanding that this is mass timber or smart wood and it is a superior product. And I think for the real estate community, for realtors in general, there's an ability to sell your client into a home that's a better quality home. There's less callbacks. So we get far less callbacks. I mean, you guys have sold pre-sales and when a developer doesn't come back and take care of their product, that's a challenge. Our homes settle less. So there's way less settlement in the building itself, meaning way less callbacks and way less inconvenience for customers and investors down the road.
So I just want to, go back to this question then about what makes a good development site for Adara. So are you kind of playing in the area of, obviously you're not building towers, you're not building high rises.
Correct.
So you're kind of looking for a site that will service wood construction, like four to six story kind of construction or townhomes or row homes, that sort of thing.
Yeah, we've done. So all of our buildings to date have topped out at six floors. We have looked at some taller opportunities around 12 stories, which is now allowed in the BC Building Code.
And that would be mass timber, though.
That would be mass timber, correct, yeah. And then we actually had a stacked townhouse site that we did in Coquitlam is a hybrid technology. So all of our sites are hybrid mass timber, but we use mass timber there, and the results were amazing. So it's a stacked townhouse, unit on top of unit, with front doors. And it's easily the best stacked product that Adara has ever done. And Adara has done more stacked townhomes in Vancouver, I think, than anybody else.
I'm just wondering, would you say Adara, I mean, I guess sounds almost like a plug, but kind of leading the way in terms of mass timber? And how did Adara kind of shift? Like, did you see that as a differentiator in the marketplace? Or I'm just curious to hear how you became kind of a leader in that space.
Sure. Yeah, no, I'll appreciate the question. It's a bit of a proud moment. Like I said, a few weeks ago, some folks from Portland came up to look at our project. So when I first started at Adara, I went down to the Portland Mass Timber Conference, which is one of the biggest conferences in the world for mass timber. And it's an excellent one. And that was about 5 years ago. And so a couple of weeks ago, they came to see us, which was kind of neat to see. Like we went down there to learn about it. Now they're coming up to pay respects and to see what we're doing. And they were blown away, and they're a great group. So I'd recommend anybody who's interested in mass timber to check out that conference. But our, I guess our interest in it is that we have no, we have no desire to build in concrete. So it's really about the evolution of wood frame construction. And it was about doing it better. We do want to go taller with wood. We see that as the future of wood frame. Having done a lot of concrete, I've done a lot of towers, and I know the efficiencies of concrete and where it really works well and where it doesn't. And in that zone from, let's say, 6 to somewhere around 18 stories, concrete is not very efficient. It's very expensive. It's very clunky. You don't enjoy all the benefits of concrete because you're not quite tall enough to really leverage it. But you have all of the overheads and costs of doing it in concrete. So now mass timber lets you bridge that gap in something that's better. It's more sustainable, you know, all the other benefits of mass timber.
Hmm. That's great. So I'm just thinking about locations then. So we've talked about some of the areas where you're developing. Where are you excited about right now? Like, which do you have submarkets that you're monitoring for future projects?
Yeah, I'd be remiss if I didn't say Coquitlam and Surrey. We're active in both of them. We're happy to be active in both of them. They're both cities that have, Surrey's been redeveloping at Surrey City Centre for a long, better part of a decade or more, over a decade at this point, but it's really starting to fill in. And if you spend any time in Surrey City Centre, you start to see the energy has changed. It's, you know, I was telling my wife is prepping for this discussion, and I said, actually, Surrey City Centre in many ways has a nicer vibe than a lot of areas in downtown Vancouver. It's especially these days. it's young, it's dynamic, it's got a lot of new restaurants open. Could use a lot of new restaurants, but it's definitely, you can feel the change. And you've got towers that are coming up that are nearing completion. So they're, you know, again, I think 4 or 5 years out, I think it's just going to have a ton of opportunity there. Coquitlam, a little bit different. There's two specific centers. They're each kind of coming into their own different ways. Those are two areas that we're focusing on. We really like the North Shore. We really like City of North Vancouver. Again, very much transit oriented. If you're on Lonsdale, you can get onto transit pretty quick. It's a progressive municipality, meaning, again, they don't line it up on a silver platter for you, but they help you develop things. And then outside of Lower Mainland, personally, I've always been excited about the Okanagan and South Okanagan. And we were talking about it earlier, I really like Penticton. So, you know, there's lots, but we're not doing, Dara's not doing anything out there, but there's just markets that you're watching.
Well, I'm curious, because your career's taken you to Alberta and to the Okanagan and then back to Vancouver. I guess I mean this question in two different ways. The question is, what, if anything, makes Vancouver unique, both from just, I guess, living in other places, but also just from a development standpoint? Mm. Can you speak to that?
Yeah. I think Vancouver, in direct comparison to either the Okanagan or where I lived in Edmonton, there's really no comparison. I mean, Vancouver offers stuff, a lifestyle year round that neither city can touch. And I mean, Kelowna's a bit, you could argue that, because there's obviously a great summer lifestyle and a great winter lifestyle as well. But just think Vancouver from an urban perspective, and if you're really looking for something that's multicultural and cosmopolitan, you can't really beat Vancouver. So I really enjoy that aspect. And I think each of the municipalities in Metro Vancouver are also getting that critical mass where they're coming into their own. I look at Richmond, and I say there's the example I use is I was in Richmond when the first influx of people from Hong Kong came. And that was very interesting to watch. And, you know, I was there and I lived it, and my dad was in real estate. So again, I lived it very closely. But use a restaurant scene or whatever there now, you have second generation Chinese that are opening up restaurants in Richmond, and they are fantastic. They are second to none. They're more eclectic. They're a bit more open, a bit more worldly, I should say. And so the vibe has changed. And again, you multiply that over Surrey City Centre. You multiply in the North Shore with the Beer District. Like, there's just lots of really cool things happening in around Metro Vancouver that make it a very exciting place. And it's I think we're only seeing the start of it.
Right. Yeah, I liken it almost to, we've talked about this before, but I remember when I was visited Japan, how there's all these different kind of sub areas, but they all are equally awesome, but offer something completely different from each other.
Yep.
And it's based around their transit lines, very similar to how our region's developing.
Yep.
But it is getting to that point that if you go to, say, Brentwood, you look around and there's a ton of stuff to do. There's great shopping. There's great restaurants. There's a completely different vibe than Metro Town, anywhere. Right.
Yep.
And it's so exciting to think forward, you know, 20 years to the the metropolitan area where you're going to have these like tons of amenity rich locations, but all offering something slightly different.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think that you kind of roll that back into the question of what makes Vancouver unique. I think it's that. And I think, you know, the macro factors, you know, our position on the West Coast, accessibility to Asia, accessibility north and south. I frequently refer to Cascadia as a region, and the ability of tech to move north and south along the West Coast, I think, is a huge benefit. Same time zone. It's all of that. That's really what makes, you know, I think we used to say, well, you can ski and kiteboard or whatever, the same day. I'm like, well, okay, that's a fairly small number of people that are doing that. But there's lots of other things for lots of other people. So
that catered to that one guy from Germany who kiteboards and skis.
Yeah. Rocky, just thinking about the current moment, the October stats just came out, and it's not all necessarily doom and gloom, but it's pretty slow out there. Of course, we're dealing, and we've talked about it so much on the show, but supply chain issues, inflation, interest rate increases, we're in a pretty challenging moment. I'm curious to hear about how you and Adara are thinking about it. If there's another moment this reminds you of, or how, if at all, you're pivoting in this moment.
Sure. Yeah. I've been in real estate for 20 years, so I have seen other moments. Nothing like what we're going through right now. I think they all have their own nuances to them. The multiple factors right now, you know, high interest rates, high employment. Some of these factors have just never really converged. So there's not a lot of data. What we're doing as an organization is really, I think, what a lot of other smart developers are doing, which is just kind of battening down the hatches, focusing on what we do best. Making sure our product is, you know, we're not rushing to the market. We're marketing product in a responsible manner. I like to say that, and I use this line with municipalities. I also talk to buyers about it. Is when we go to ground or when we start marketing a project, that project is going forward. There's nothing else happening. That project's going forward. Whereas I think there are some people out there that are, that can't. Either they're going to launch and not be able to start or for whatever variety of reasons. So we're just being very responsible in our approach to development and really just focusing on what we do best.
Does this moment right now in the economy and also in the market, does it remind you of any time in the past 20 years, like something that it feels like a parallel?
No. And I think people are looking for a parallel. People are looking for something to compare it to. And even I am, I think everybody is. We're all trying to say, okay, well, we're old enough now. We should be able to have a tool belt to go into to say, well, this is how we're going to do it. But it really is just super unique. And I think, again, generally if something slow, you know, I use the three-legged stool, you can sell, you can build, and you can get approvals. And, you know, all three of those just continue to be challenged. You know, we it's still hard to get an approval, still hard to build something, and it's difficult to sell. So you've got a supply constrained market that's only going to become more so. And the unfortunate part is it's going to wash out in rates, whether it's rental rates or housing costs going forward.
Hey everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join. Type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakland, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakland.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
You know, we've talked about this on the show, but, and you just mentioned that Dara, when you launch a project, you're launching it actually,
yep,
right?
Yep.
I'm just thinking about, and this really came out in some conversations, I think about 6 months ago we had, but this idea of demand shocks in Vancouver, right? That we go through these cycles of crazy demand and then they disappear. And then it's markets like this where you're like, where'd everybody go? And then nobody builds anything. And then we have another demand shock
And then it's like this kind of agonizing process in which it feels very, it's either like we're rip roaring or we're dead. Do you foresee launching a number of projects over the next, say, 12 to 18 months as we're presumably in a slower market?
No, I mean, we won't take our foot off the gas. We just won't press as hard if the market continues to show signs of weakness. We're continuing to build. We have a great project in Britannia that's 73 townhomes that's, you know, performing very well and continue to build there. We've got a couple of rental projects under construction. We're going to continue to focus on those. And then we've got the two market condo projects again, but they're well positioned. The land was purchased right. We're struggling through construction costs just like everybody else is.
Right.
But there's a great product at the end of the day. And now we just have to make sure that we are talking to buyers, talking to the real estate community and kind of presenting these communities as opportunities. Because I really don't, I tell everybody, while interest rates are high, it's not going to get any cheaper to build homes. Unequivocally, homes are not going to get any cheaper to build. So, you know, take everything and land is, you know, maybe going to come off a bit, but you know, take that for what it's worth. When, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road, we're going to be in a more expensive housing market.
Rocky, we're in this weird moment, and we've talked about this before, I think, with a number of guests, but it's just a curious time where, as you just mentioned, the cost of housing is continuing to increase, and 5 years from now, it's going to be even more expensive to build, and yet we're seeing a market in decline. So. On the resale market, stuff's getting cheaper. On the new construction, it's getting more expensive. How do you see this playing itself out?
Right. So yeah, I think that the market long term, you know, like you said, we're going to be, costs are escalating. So we're going to end up in a market that's going to have to deal with that convergence or that compression of that difference. So, you know, you're going to see smaller homes, you're going to see, you know, prices are going to increase. I do think there's going to have to be some government-led solutions, and whether it's regards to mortgages, extending amortization rates. They've lost, the government's lost a lot of the levers around interest rates. We can't really play with those too much anymore. You know, I think they'll settle back down, but their historic lows are gone for a very long time. So yeah, it's going to be some other things that change in the market, some other structural things that change in the market in order to make up that gap. Because, you know, I remember when Reliance launched the tower on the old Toyota dealership downtown, it was $1,100 a square foot. I remember saying at that time, you're never going to see 1,100 square feet downtown again, and we're never going to see it again. You know, right. It's just, you know, now guys are spending, you know, $600-$700 a square foot just to build the tower, just the hard cost. Let alone everything else.
Right. So Rocky, maybe shifting gears a little bit here, but in thinking about the pre-sale market, I'd love to hear kind of your thoughts on how the market is, but then also a little bit about how the resale market and the pre-sale market kind of interact in a market like this moment.
Yeah, sure. No, we're pretty happy actually. We've launched two projects into this very challenging time. Again, going back to the challenge of approvals, we got our permits in the, you know, call it in the middle of summer, and so we launched into fall into a market with a lot of uncertainty. None of the fundamentals of what we were offering were changing. It was a smart wood mass timber building, the Adira name, great location, great product, price point accurate, et cetera, et cetera. We had a great team. What it changes everything else. Yeah. So now coming into the market, we've, you know, the Pure project in Surrey, which is 248, wood frame homes in a 6-story form, on the west side of Surrey city center. It's walkable to SkyTrain. It's one of the last bastions of low rise wood frame housing in otherwise a sea of towers.
Right.
So all the benefits of being in Surrey city center without having to be in a 50 story tower with 600 of your closest friends with two elevators. So it's,
and weirdly, you don't talk to any of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And then same with Coquitlam. We launched our project Soul, or we've kind of been softly launching Soul over the last several weeks. That's a community of just over 200 units. It's a boutique building of only about 92 homes with 110 lifestyle rentals built next to it around a courtyard, central courtyard. So there's lots of amenities. But again, you're like less than 700 meters, maybe 600 meters to SkyTrain station. And some of the best, where I want to see Surrey City Center go is where some of the stuff is happening in Quitlam. I mean, we've seen some of the best ramen places start to open up on the North Road corridor. We've seen a high-end bakery from North End now move into Coquitlam. I mean, what in 10 years ago did we see high-end bakeries coming to North Road and Coquitlam from North End? No, you just didn't see it. Yeah. So that pre-sale market, while it's been challenging, we've had a good level of success with both projects. It's not a slam dunk. It's not you're not selling out in 30 days. Call it a weekend. But I asked myself when I was thinking about this is when did anybody ever think it was healthy to sell out a project over a weekend?
So Rocky, I think we've established the pre-sale market is pretty lackluster, generally speaking, right now. I'm kind of curious to hear, as the chief operating officer of Adara, what would be a signal or many signals? What are signals right now that would give you signs of optimism? Would it be registrations on your website? Is it foot traffic? Is it actual deals taking place? Is it Tiff Macklem doing a 0.5 interest rate? I feel like there's all sorts of ways to read the tea leaves here. What would give you hope?
What we were talking about is I think smart businesses are getting as much information as possible. We're in a time that we've never really experienced before. So you're trying to get as much information, digest it, and look through the lens of what a quality business does and the fundamentals. See what's still there. I'm with you. I thought the 0.5 versus 0.75 was positive. I mean, that's just me as a developer, the eternal optimist, maybe. I was hopeful from it. All of us are learning more about economics than we ever wanted to in our whole lives.
Right? I'm following the Bank of Canada in a way. Yeah. And even the Fed, the Fed the other day, I was like, man, I'm waking up in the middle of the night. How many more hours to this? Yeah. This is a weird moment.
I don't want to know Tiff Macklem's name.
Yeah. And you look and now even the comparison between the states and here and their interest rate market versus our interest rate market, there's differences there. And then if they move and we don't move, the impact of the dollar, there's all these things. So again, I just think looking at the fundamentals, I think what at the end of the day, what buyers want is some level of certainty. I think if the next rate increase, let's cross our fingers. Maybe it's 25 basis points. Maybe it's 50. Hopefully it's not 75. But if there's, they kind of want to peek over the dashboard and know what's coming.
Right.
When they can't see that, they freeze. They just don't make the decisions. Right. So what we have is, there's the first-time home buyers are being pushed out of the market at a pace. I was reading an article today in the New York Times. It's gone down like 26% from 40% of the market in the states. And in our product, we were used to seeing 60% home buyers, and there's a mix. But now it's more investors because they're the ones that have a bit of the, I guess, the longer term view. They're a bit more not brazen is not the right term, but they're maybe a bit more confident, well heeled. Whereas first-time home buyers are just unfortunately not able to make a decision. It's not their fault. They're trying to understand the tea leaves and there's nothing's making sense.
Does that change the way that Adara does things? Like, is there a pivot here because of that? Like, do you stop building product for first time home buyers right now? Or do you focus on the missing middle product? Or do you focus on investors? Or does that change anything?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think one of the benefits of Adara being is 50, it's almost 55 years the company's been in business. Our product has always been, a bit of a well-built product, but not overly, we're not trying to serve a luxury market or an upper-end market. We're trying to serve home buyers and investors that want a good quality product. So I think in times like this, that's when our product really starts to make a lot of sense. So our home sizes are reasonable. Our offerings, like our spec is solid and is tested and true. But yet we're not, you're not overpaying for stuff you don't need. And in this market, people will only pay for what they need. We have an option on our homes for air conditioning. That's top of mind for a lot of people now. But there, I would say, something like 90%+ of the market does not option air conditioning. There's air conditioning available, but they'll air condition the whole building. We let buyers choose whether they want to air condition their home or not. It's a bit of an acrobatic feat internally and for our construction guys. I tell you, our construction guys really understand why they're doing it. They're doing it for the customer, and the customer really appreciates it. So we're getting a lot. And that's just one example of how we're not pivoting per se. We're just doing what we do, trying to do it better.
I've never even heard that before. How does that even work? Is it like a split duct system, or is it like
it's a wall unit with a condenser on your deck.
Right.
So it's it cools the air in your home. It gives you that comfort. And again, not all buyers can afford it. Also, not all home buyers need it. If you're on the north side of a building, you probably still don't need it. But on the south side, on a sunny day, especially on like our building in Crest in North Vancouver, where you are south on a slope, you definitely need some AC.
That's awesome,
Rocky. Can you time the pre-sale market as a buyer?
Oh, completely.
You said that like you didn't even believe the question yourself.
I think, having been in the business for 20 years and starting in construction, I can't say I understand everything about construction, but I know a lot about it. And I, between material cost increases, labor cost increases, energy code changes, seismic code changes, building code changes. Between all of these factors, there's just simply no way we can go back. And it's a great question, because I was thinking about this, like the homes I built 20 years ago. I remember looking at that time, thinking the homes built 20 years before them were absolute garbage. Yeah. But now I go back and look, man, the homes I built 20 years ago, not that they're garbage, but they're nothing like the homes we built today. They're not nearly as thermally efficient. The heating systems are completely different. It's they're just outdated, and that goes to that whole conversation of, don't build any new housing, but the new housing of today is old housing of tomorrow. And that's what replenishes the housing stock. And that's just what we're not doing enough of. But yeah.
Yeah. I remember a guy I know is a builder, that one of his things was that he's like, code today and changing code makes sure that good product exists. And he was saying that in the critique of an inspector saying that, a lot of the newer spec product is garbage, right? Mm-hmm. Which was this guy's opinion.
Yeah.
But that was met with the, like, you can't, it's hard to build garbage when the code is so stringent, right?
Yeah. There's definitely some truth to that. I mean, it's, I was looking at some step 4 townhomes in Vancouver, the amount of outboard insulation and this and that. I mean, people can poke holes at it and then this and that, but it just makes you elevate your construction standard to a degree when you do that. It's not perfect, but it's definitely, it's definitely better.
You can still screw up the tiles in the bathroom.
Yeah. You can still screw up your dielots or whatever. But again, it's not making a home anymore.
So it sounds like if there was advice for somebody potentially thinking about pulling the trigger on pre-sale, in real estate, we always say there's no time like the present, but literally, 6 months, a year from now, a year and a half from now, it's going to be more expensive.
Yeah. We don't want to keep going back to our projects, but for instance, we've got homes in Coquitlam that were, again, we won't be able to build them the same price 2-3 years from now, and we're offering incentives because the market is a bit slower. And maybe you stage your deposit. There's a number of different things that help you offset the challenges in the market. So I do think for any buyer that's in the market today, go in and talk to your realtor, go into presentation centers, figure out what's out there. Because there are good opportunities out there for sure. And you just have to spend a bit, and the other part is you don't have to feel rushed. You can go in, you can have conversations. The sales team should be, I know our sales team is great with follow-up, and they'll make sure that you have everything you need to make decisions. And people are coming to our presentation centers much more than they used to because they have the time to. And I think that's a healthy thing. But there's no time like the present. And I think we have to see through rates as they are today. They're not, they're not sustainable. They're being raised. They're being increased to this point for a reason. The Bank of Canada has been very clear. They have to break the back of inflation. They don't have to continue to break its back once it's broken. But, you know, it'll hopefully it'll...
You know, it, to step it, on his neck. Inflation on break.
Yeah. You know, once it returns to some semblance of normalcy, you know, I've spoken with a lot of smart people and you know, they'll think it's going to settle in at around 3%. It's not going to go up. Yeah, that will lead to a healthier market. And that's, you know, kind of where we were historically.
We've talked about other markets in BC, but I guess kind of a two-part question. What's on Adair's radar right now in the province? And then I'd love to hear, like, what's your, you know, somebody who's been in the business for 20 years building bird's eye view. Is there a region that you really like or an area that you're really excited about?
Also, because you were active in Calgary, lived in Edmonton, lived in Kelowna, I feel like there's a lot of people we know at least thinking at the moment about cash flow, and Alberta seems to be on a lot of people's radars.
Yeah.
And Calgary as a future city, for the first time I'm hearing that in a while.
Yeah, I lived in Edmonton, did a lot of work in Calgary. I really like Calgary City. I like them both. Edmonton's just, you know, the weather's just harsher up there. It's a more challenging place to, you know, to live. It's, you know, I remember the day I moved there, it was -58.8 degrees. It was the coldest place on earth. So it was cold. It gets cold. But you know, that being said, great jobs. And that's Edmonton and Calgary, lots of good jobs, lots of immigration, low cost of housing. And they have while their housing stock is growing, can grow faster than ours. They have less stringent. Their ability to supply housing is better, for multitude of reasons. The cash flow, the ability to cash flow property there is better than here. Moving that over to Kelowna. I think Kelowna, is a good example. We were talking about one earlier. Like, I think if you're able to get into the market there, whether it's a townhouse that you know, it's going to get you fairly good rent, or a house with a suite or a basement suite or whatever you got. I've been in that position there before, and it's a great market. And I think you look at these major centers, and what do they have? They have good job growth, you know, healthcare jobs, government jobs, whatever they have. And you look at Victoria, it's a good market for rent as well. It's just the housing cost, the entry cost is high. But I think from a fundamentals point of view, you can see why Edmonton, Calgary, Kelowna have some good opportunities, even the island in certain pockets. And it's good to keep an eye on it.
And you're the third person lately that's mentioned Penticton, and you mentioned it early. Can you just talk a little bit about why you like
Scott Brown? That was that episode's going out this week.
I'm blanking on somebody on the commercial real estate podcast. I think actually Western Investor, it might be in their top five.
It is. It's picks. Number three or four. Yeah. I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think somebody used a really good example. I think the Kelowna has grown to such a degree, and I have a lot of good friends that are developers and real estate in Kelowna still. And Kelowna really is a big city now, which I think is fantastic, but it's never going to be the Kelowna that people, like a lot of people there, just it doesn't suit them anymore. So they're spreading out, and people who used to want to come to Kelowna for that lifestyle, well, the lifestyles change a bit. Still fantastic, but it's changed a bit. So where do you go? You go to Vernon, or you go to, you know, you kind of spread out up and down the Okanagan Valley. And I think Penticton, somebody else said it, and I wish I could say it was me, but you know, it's if Kelowna is Seattle, Penticton is Bellevue. You know, it's just that you're smack dab in the center of wine country, and not at the north end like Kelowna is. You're right in the heart of it. You've got a lake on both sides. You've got mountains on both sides. Good access to, there's a regional airport there, which is great. Lots of good jobs. So I think it's got a lot of opportunity on it. And then just analyzing, because we have a place in Kelowna, was where might we go next as a family? Is it might be Penticton.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Very nice. And last but not least, predictions about the market next 1, 3, 5 years.
November 2023. November 2026.
Yeah. And then we'll get to the Canucks predictions before the game. But those are more dire.
Yeah. I think we're gonna wait and see what happens with these next couple of interest rate hikes. Just in terms of what buyers are gonna do, I think. from a market perspective, I think we're going to continue to be undersupplied. I was listening to Benjamin Tao on a UDI interview the other day, and God, I wish I had his quote. He put it so perfectly, which is just housing. You know, 2 years from now, we're going to be talking about a housing. We're going to be in a housing crisis. Housing costs are going to be out of control. There's going to be no supply. This and that. And right now we're just not building enough. And so it's, you know, to your point earlier, it's what are we have this cyclical nature to our housing market, we just can't get over it. So I think we will be in a better position as we go out. I'm not sure exactly a year from now, but you know, 2-3 years from now, yeah, we're going to be out of this thing, and we're going to be wishing we never slowed down. I'm hopeful that the talk at the government levels, all levels, federal, provincial, municipal, is starting to talk about the right things, starting to talk about supply. I'm hearing different tones from some municipalities, definitely at the provincial and federal level, they're saying the right things, whether they can do it is another thing. So I'm hoping some of that stuff comes to reality, which I think will be a game changer for us. You know, we've got, I couldn't believe it. We've got massive immigration targets, which we all know, and you know, 430 to 460. Yeah, like, we're going to do 500s.
Yeah.
Well,
it's actually kind of mind boggling, right?
It is, like, yeah.
In after the housing crisis we've been in, it's like, let's ramp these numbers up.
Yeah. Yeah,
bad if you have some rentals.
Yeah,
but
during an economic slowdown and during a time when we're not building as much, let's pump the numbers up, right? Yeah. So I think it's just me crushing on rental housing, you know, in a bad way if you're a renter, and like in a good way if you're a landlord. So,
well, we have this segment called the Five Wire, five lighthearted questions that we end the show with. Yeah. Can you stick around for that, Rocky?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I hope I can. I always listen to this from all your guests, and so I'm always interested to hear what people say. So hopefully my ones are interesting.
The Five Wire is brought to you by Scalina Real Estate. Hey, that sounds familiar. Scalina Real Estate is a full-service real estate company serving Vancouver, offering comprehensive, tried and tested buyer and seller systems.
With over a decade in the top 10% of realtors in the Lower Mainland and a perfect 5-star Google review, Scalina Real Estate can help with all your real estate needs.
We also have an extensive network of the best industry professionals and trades right across the country.
There's no reason to not get in touch. Head over to scalinarealestate.com to find out more.
Well, we'll start with one book that you would recommend for all of our listeners.
Okay. Mine are two pretty basic, somewhat boring books. One is that I read recently again. I've read it 4 or 5 times with my kids, The Alchemist. I think it's just
Paulo Coelho.
Yeah. And I listened to him on Oprah's podcast as well, which is interesting. But I read it with my kids. We read it all together separately. Again, it just picked up things and messages in it and things to consider that I hadn't picked up the first 3 times.
And your kids are, sorry, you said 10?
My son Zion is 10 and my daughter Aria is 14.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds, I have an 11-year-old, so.
It's a good book. And it's interesting to hear how each of them take away something different. It's pretty cool.
Should get you to read it for the first time too.
Yeah. And then my other book was, I picked two, I've got a lot of classic business books that I like to read. And it was How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Oh yeah.
I love that book. And you know, you could pick it up at any time and, you know, read 4 or 5 pages and you get something out of it. So,
right.
Yeah.
I still mirror people to this day because of that book.
Yeah.
For the listeners at home, I just mirrored Rocky. Matt, question two.
In the last 5 years, Rocky, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
Yeah, I thought about this one. I am not, I'm a creature of habit, so I don't really change my routine too much. But in the last several weeks now, I've been trying, don't hate me, I've been trying intermittent fasting.
Oh, and everybody in this room.
So I tried it because a friend a couple of friends were doing it, and I've heard good things about it. And I think the thing that I like about it most is that it's just really just made me more alert about what I eat. And definitely, 12 hours is pretty easy. 14 is starting to push it. But 14 to 18, now that's when you really start to feel it.
Yeah, so, that's when you got to avoid you at the office.
Well, you know what? And Oakland founder Michael Yu's been doing, I said to Adam, intermittent fasting. I ran into him on 4th last weekend,
And I was like, oh, that guy looks like Michael Yu, but like
a younger,
10 years younger and like way thinner. Yeah. And he's just, he said, I think he's actually exercising, but intermittent fasting was his number one reason.
Yeah.
It's, we started doing it about a year ago or so.
I kind of fall off the wagon every year.
I though feel it, my energy levels are way better.
Yeah.
Way more 100%. Energy.
Yep.
And the mornings are awesome. I like it so much. I sometimes think about doing longer fasts, like going on, we'll save that for my desert podcast. Right?
With some of that,
peyote.
But what I think again, we're so used to our life. I think it just kind of makes us rethink such a basic part of our life. And,
right.
and I think it's a beneficial thing. Just changes your mind.
Right on.
Yeah.
What music is on repeat right now or a favorite band recommendation?
I listen to a lot of podcasts. You can ask anybody who knows me. I'm shooting up podcasts all the time. So I that's what I listen to. But if I'm not, then it's usually reggaeton of some kind. And usually because people like, you don't understand the words, but I just love the music. It's just awesome. And if it's not that, if it's something that's on repeat, it might be Bob Marley.
Yeah. Nice. Reggaeton. I like it. I'm a big fan as well. I like the upbeat energy.
There you go.
Anything you have been binge watching lately or favorite movie?
I watched, most recently was House of Dragons. So I watched that with my wife. We enjoyed that. That's it was started off slow. Wasn't nearly as good as the Game of Thrones, but it got there towards the end. And then movies, I just found so movies just suck nowadays. I just don't find. I guess the last enjoyable one was Maverick.
Oh right,
You know what I've been thinking a lot about is
Tom Cruise. With the shirt.
Speaking of
Maverick. past guest fan favorite, Dustin Woodhouse, who's been on the show a bunch, cited Unforgiven, like that Clint Eastwood movie from the 90s, which I haven't watched in a long time, but I remember it being like the best movie ever. And he said Unforgiven. I said, oh, that's a great movie. And he was like, actually, it's not anymore. The YouTube social media has ruined movies. It's actually super boring and you'll hate it.
Right.
It's like, I haven't tried it, but maybe movies as a medium is
Top, have you seen that Top Gun?
No, movie? I haven't seen the Top Gun movie.
It's actually, we started it too late and I fell asleep, not because it wasn't a good movie, partly because of my age and my BMI. But I think it was,
my age and my BMI.
That's my body mass index.
Keep up with me. Come on.
I've never heard that. I fall asleep when I sit down.
Yeah.
But no, I honestly, it's really well done.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's a bit of a vanity project for Tom Cruise, but it's...
it's such a hard act to follow. Like, how do you make a Top Gun 2? I was expecting the worst, but it was entertaining. It was, ticked all the boxes that you should have a movie and,
And you weren't checking your phone every 5 minutes. At least that's, I feel like, the hurdle you got to get over.
Well, the hurdle is just how bad Tom Cruise's brand is. You got to like him again, and it's not easy.
Last but not least, Rocky, something you've purchased for under $1,500 recently that's had a positive impact on your life.
Sure, yeah. I actually don't buy a lot of stuff for myself. My kids usually take all my money. $1,500. We got a dog 2 years ago. Not a COVID dog, but yet a COVID dog. He's a boxer, a white boxer. He's actually the best energy around the house. It's just amazing. He's a fantastic dog. We couldn't ask for anything better. So, all around.
I'm just curious. Is it the energy? Is that the real benefit? Or cause I often think like my wife and my daughter, we have two dogs and I guess a dog person now. But actually what I like is that I literally have to walk 45 minutes a day because they go crazy if you don't. Like, it's just adds to this routine of kind of getting out, clearing your head. But is it the energy? Is it what's the best part about this dog?
Yeah, I think it's the energy. It's what they get back to you. You realize, these creatures just love you unconditionally, and they kind of teach you about the simple things in life. And I this morning, after the gym, took the dog for a very short walk, but, you know, got out, got some fresh air, and you can feel the appreciation. And I think they just teach you to look at things differently. And yeah, it's the vibe though. Yeah. Just they're in the house and it's just such a great energy. So.
Rocky, how can people find out more about what you're up to? And of course, more about Adira.
Sure. Yeah. No, you can go to our website, adira.com, ADERA.com. Like I said, we've got a couple of projects that we're marketing we've got three: Britannia townhomes, Soul, which are condos in Coquitlam, and Pura, which are condos in Surrey. They all have their websites, and encourage everybody to check them out. And then we do a lot and stuff, you know, encourage everybody to look at Mass Timber. It's something that we take a leadership role in, and feel free to look that up let me know if you have any questions. I'm always open to a conversation.
Yeah, I like this idea. I haven't been in the Smartwood room.
Yeah, please.
But this
we'll have to meet up there.
It's such a cool feature of a presentation center. So, Well, thanks again for taking the time, Rocky. Great conversation, and yeah, thanks for coming down to Kokomo Studios. Appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Rocky Sethi, the Chief Operating Officer at Adira Homes.
Really enjoyed that conversation with Rocky, Matt. Man, I got to say, one of the downsides of being away right now is it's so great having people in Kokomo Studios. It was awesome having Rocky there. We had a great time, and he's doing great work over there at Adira Homes.
Yeah, no, it was a great conversation. Hopefully we can have him back. And there's one thing for sure. I have been lining up the 2023 schedule. And we not only are we going to close this year off strong, we are moving right into January with some really top-notch guests, just like Rocky. So
yeah,
we thank him for coming down. It was a great conversation. Before we go at him, we should touch on a few things again. One is those t-shirts. Head over to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast on Instagram. Share your favorite episode. Yes. Tag us in it. We will reshare it and get you a t-shirt. We're out of the Live from Kokomo Studios shirts. Those went quick. Couple remaining of the Build More Housing shirts. So if you're interested in a shirt, or you have a loved one or a friend who you think may be excited about a Christmas present like that, that is the way to get your hands on one. And we also have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website, of course, where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the LiveWire. This is our weekly mailer. We just got the November stats. We haven't talked about those all that much. Not much to talk about. Some pretty low sales ratios, kind of to be expected, but I feel like there was a bit of a bump in October, and it might have been a short-lived bump in terms of an uptick in sales. But you'll get stats like that before anyone else. And you can really dig down. We have sales ratios for neighborhoods. So I was looking at, you know, single family homes in the Cambie area specifically. And, you know, we're at like a 9% sales ratio or something like that right now. But really useful stuff. We also have deal of the month, tons of commercial and residential VIP presale opportunities, the back catalog, and private client services.
Yeah, Matt, if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com/PCS. Sign up for your free account today. What a time to be monitoring the market with PCS for sure. The other thing is the feedback on these shirts, I got to say, makes me think that I missed out on a career in t-shirt design, because we are starting to get people that are saying that, man, we just got our shirt, love the quality, but also love the design.
Oh, imagine? They're good looking shirts. There's no question about it. And I had nothing to do with these, but they're good looking shirts. So Melissa on our team said her significant other wears his shirt so often, he wears it more than I do. And I wear one of these shirts every day. Because they're just that comfortable.
And
they're
that cool.
Exactly. Yeah. And he doesn't even like the show.
Right. He hates it, to be honest. This is the thing. Why are you wearing it?
That's what I said to her.
But anyways, you can get your shirt. Just follow us at Vancouver Real Estate Podcast on Instagram. Reach out. We'd love to get you a shirt. A lot of people have just sent us DMs saying, hey, can I have a shirt?
I know. It's like they missed the memo, right? It's like, do a review, share with a friend. It's like, hey, can I just get three? It's like, all right.
And then it's like, yeah, sure. Yeah,
we'll send them on.
Just three. We're being very generous with these shirts, but we want everybody in the VREP community to get one. So reach out. And thanks for listening. And yeah, more bangers coming before the end of the year. And then, of course, starting the new year off with a bang.
Absolutely. If you want to talk about that or anything else, give me a shout at 778-847-2854 or matt@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
We also got that Kokomo line, info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Well, have a great week, guys. And we'll be back next week with some more great content.
Take care, everyone, and talk to you next week.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.